And we are live. Welcome to episode 40 of To The Unknown Pod, a TGFB podcast. My name is Jordan Bush. I'm the executive director of TGFB Media, which exists to help Christians, really people everywhere, use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. I am joined by two of the three Island boys today. Go ahead and introduce yourself, guys.
I'm Matt Purvis on the Big Island of Hawaii. I'm a longtime pastor and business owner here and also into Bitcoin and trying to understand how these things along with AI works, which we'll talk about today. No relation to the Epstein's Island, the Island boys.
Definitely not.
Hey, I'm Ryan Finley. Entrepreneur, build software projects with my boys. I think about AI a lot. I use it a lot. And I have six kids.
So today, the reason Ryan mentioned AI is because we're going to do another AI episode. We've done a few AI episodes. This is obviously still a Bitcoin podcast and theology podcast and parenting podcast and a whole bunch of other things. But we reserve the right to to devote time to certain topics that we think, that we're thinking about and that we're interacting with. And so we're going to do this podcast about AI. The reason is because there's a couple articles that came out this week. Let me share this here. A couple articles that impacted us. Okay, one is by Matt Schumer right here. It's called Something Big Is Happening. This is about AI. And then there's another article that we'll look at in a second by a guy named Brent Bishore. We'll show that one right now too. There it is. AI's amplification. So Matt's article that we know of, Matt is not a believer. And then Brent is. So kind of we're going to focus on Matt's article first and kind of talk about what he's seeing and kind of his 30,000 foot view of AI and what's going on and how it's going to affect all of us and is affecting all of us. And then we'll look at Brent's. So Ryan's going to take the lead on this episode. So go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, I don't know for 100% sure that Matt is not a believer, but
okay.
He's definitely, speaking from more of the professional, like the software development space. He's an investor and, a software developer, and he's been using AI constantly for the last several years. So he just has a very unique perspective of the bleeding edge of where we're at in the AI space. I highly recommend everyone read the article. We can share a link to it.
Yeah, we'll share the link in the show notes.
We're not going to be able to go over the entire thing, but I can help kind of sum it up. He does a really good job of talking about how most people have formed like their view of AI and its capabilities from different snapshots, right? So, around 2020, things blew up and everyone, ChatGPT, or I think it was 2020, it started getting a lot of attention and people, all of a sudden the masses come and, oh, what's this all about? I'm going to put it through, and sort of throw in questions at it. And it was impressive, but also like very, very early and not impressive in a lot of ways. And so people formed, this is a cute toy. And he actually, he puts a little timeline up there and he's like, even, I think it was 2022, 2023, people would go on there and put a basic math problem and it would get the math problem wrong. And like, oh, that's great. This AI is coming to save the world, but it can't do 8 times 7, And then also, people would point to hallucinations. Again, he says, like, rightfully so. But what he points out is that people aren't very good at is they're not good at recognizing the pace of change. And if you're working up close with these tools and these models, the pace of change has been drastically accelerating over these last 5 years. And coming up until even a couple months ago, it had made some amazing changes, like some pretty big breakthroughs. Then there's another marker, and he says it was, I think he says February 5th, and it was the latest GPT, I think it was 5.2, ChatGPT 5.2 or 5.3 with the Codex, and then the new Claude, the Anthropic, Claude Opus, whatever it is, the newest Opus model. And basically, to give people an idea of where they're at, highly skilled software developers are now not writing code. And that's highly skilled software developers all day long. Most of them are not writing code anymore. So something that might have taken that profession, you know, 6, 8, 10 years to learn, the latest AI models are now so good and so advanced that the software developers are now just speaking into their computer, prompting it what to build, what to refine, making changes, and they're doing that all day long. And, you know, he goes into depth, like describing different scenarios. And it really is mind-boggling. We'll touch on this later. I think on maybe even this weekend, this coming Saturday, we might interview Moses. So if anyone has questions for Moses, Moses is using the latest cutting edge models or the bleeding edge models, and he uses them all day, every day. So if you have questions about what changes he's seen in the software development industry, maybe write those down, shoot them over to us. But all that to say, he's basically sounding the alarm, not the alarm, like, oh, be afraid, but like, it's basically like, it's not this future thing that, oh, someday it's going to really impact everyone's jobs. Like, he's basically saying it's here today. Like, and I would agree. The change has arrived. Like, the models are so unbelievable right now that, and his point is that most normies have no idea that these advancements have been made. They're not staying up on the latest model, or they're not paying for the latest model. And so he's just like, hey, you need to wake up. You need to use these models every day. Try to learn how to use them for like an hour a day kind of a thing. And, if you have kids, just know that like the whole job market's going to be completely changing in the next 1 to 5 years. Whole career paths aren't going to exist. Anyways.
Yeah. Just kind of reinforce what you're saying. I mean, this is CNBC, and you know, according to them, take that with a grain of salt, but, AI was behind 50,000 layoffs in 2025. So you got companies like Amazon and Salesforce. Some of the biggest companies in the world are cutting jobs because of just even where AI, I mean, they're looking at the trajectory of what AI can do, what it's, you know, what it can do, what it's going to be able to do if it's on current trajectories. And all of these guys, for a whole host of reasons, not least of which is because of the currency debasement that that we talk about normally on this podcast, they're all of them are seeing their costs go up. Their human labor is one of the largest costs that they have. And so with AI, they have a way to save some of the cost of hiring humans, especially US-based humans. And so everywhere that is possible, these are not charities. Everywhere that is possible, the largest companies are going to be doing this. We could do a whole episode, we probably should, just about the problems that can arise from that, right? Of just seeing, accumulation of capital, paper capital or money as the end all be all of, you know, why a business exists. Like, I think that's the fact that we're at that place is a very dangerous and not good place to be in. Because, I mean, again, at the end of the day, we all acknowledge that the simple accumulation of money is not the end all be all. There's a reason why we object to things like, trying to avoid taxes in illegal ways or accepting a bribe. Like, we all recognize that there's a moral, there's a moral standard that is a higher standard than just blindless or the blind accumulation of capital. And yet that is how many of these companies operate, is that, you know, you basically you do whatever you can and whatever you have to accumulate as much money as possible without running afoul of any laws. And to try to do that from a couple of different angles, we're also going to try to put tremendous pressure on lawmakers in order to, you know, keep them from making laws about things that would keep us from making money. So we could do, and I think it would be, we'll do a future episode on that. But like in reality, I mean, this is just where we're at right now. This is something that's going to happen. We're going to reap the consequences, good or bad, of a lot of these things. But the way that these companies operate is they're looking for any way to save money. And the force multiplier that AI is, just the way that it enables already skilled people to be multiple times more productive is something that is going to be a no-brainer for a lot of these companies that at this point are the largest engines of the United States economy, the global economy in many ways. We'll talk more about that, but that's kind of what this is good to Ryan's point about this being something that's present today. This is something that is, this isn't like, oh, in 5 years, we're talking about like right now they cut 50,000 jobs, and the speed at which these models are getting better and becoming, you know, even more helpful, even more useful, more skilled, things along those lines. I mean, we're seeing this the three of us use AI every day. And, you know, I'm seeing, you know, just with the way that I, who am not a programmer, just it gets more and more useful. Matt, why don't you, we've mentioned this at some point, but we were talking before we got on before we started recording, we had like a whole, it would have been an awesome pod if we would if we just hit record earlier. But Matt, kind of talk about the way AI, how it's affected your use of, you know, Google.
Yeah, I think this is universal for most of us who spend any time online. Is the days of Google search are not only gone, but it's almost like memory hole. Like I can't remember, in terms of my spirit, I can't remember having a question and saying, I'm going to go search Google and then look through the top 10 and then look through maybe the second page every 100,000 searches, you know, and try to read 10 articles and glean the information that relates to me from it. You know, those days are completely gone. So people have shifted. I'm pretty sure it's universal. Maybe there's like 5 boomers that haven't shifted yet. And I'm having full on conversations, and it's about everything, repairing my vehicles, about what would it look like? I just closed a business of mine and I asked, you know, what are the steps I need to take? Okay, it's got to be with the state and then with the IRS and then with the SBA and then all the, you know, and then I make my list from there. And so that, I think that's what you're referring to, Jordan. It's a simple idea, but AI essentially became the person doing the Google search to return to you the things you want to know from that search. And so that makes it very conversational. And in my experience, because I also am a preacher, so I do sermons. I write sermons every week, and I've used it for that. I'm using it very little for that now because I found its limitations on numerous fronts. So my normie mind, which I'm probably like 85% normie, and maybe I'm a little more in touch because I'm interested in the subject. My normie mind says, you lied to me about my timing chain. So I know that I can't totally trust you. And so I have to spend 10% of my time on AI making sure it's true, you know, if it matters a lot. But that leads into some of this conversation, which is for us normies, we might think, oh, it's so limited. It's a bubble. You know, it's not as good as they thought. It failed on its promises. And the truth is, it is limited in certain areas, but the people who know, and that's the example of this, you know, whatever his name is, the article Ryan mentioned. When it's in its gear, when it's doing the thing it does best, it's like blowing everything away. And if we're living in 2023 thinking that's not the case, then you don't know what's going on in the and what's going to come for you in the next 5 years.
Yeah, and we see a lot of this. I mean, we've already lived through this on a couple fronts, right? We lived through this with the dawn of the internet, right? There's the initial boom. Any company that remotely has a website, their stock is just going through the roof because there's this search, there's this delta between what is actually useful, like what is actually true, and the understanding of normal people to be able to figure out, to be able to understand it and figure out, okay, how is this useful? And so, of course, there's like a massive overestimation of, to the point where like there's this, stock market bubble, or that's the stock market, the internet bubble, like you had the dot-com bubble, this crash. There was this giant ramp up because people can see it on the horizon, like, whoa, this is going to transform the world. But not every understanding of how that would happen and what it would look like, most of them are wrong. And so that, there ended up being a crash. And yet we look at the subsequent 20 years, 25 years, and I mean, our world has been transformed to staggering degrees by the advent of the internet and just the maturing of the internet and the logic of the internet throughout the rest of the world, for good or for ill, to the point that we can't even, it's hard for most of us, especially those of us who, came into adulthood sometime in there, to even fathom life without it. And so there's something very similar going on with AI, where, again, there's all these promises about what AI is going to do. You have all these AI companies have just, valuations that are just absolutely absurd. And yet there's like the ramp up. There's all these promise people can see. There's, you got things like Tesla. You've got Waymo. You've got, usage of, robot operated cars, or at least semi-robotic, robotically operated, a little bit Philippine, slave camp operated. And one of the CEOs was one of the higher executives of Waymo, this company that does robotic cars, robotic taxis, basically, admitted that there are guys in the Philippines who are providing oversight to some of what's going on, which casts, doubt on some of the things that they were.
Well, if an emergency happened, they would, like, those humans in the Philippines would
take
step in. Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about a liability nightmare. The robot's not responsible and the American driver's not responsible.
Yeah. Well, and this is where you get all these ethical issues, right? Of like, wait, so who is responsible if there is something that happens? Who can get sued? Is it the, what does this look like? And so that's the thing, is when you're introducing these technologies super quickly without doing the ethical work, without trying to expand on these things up front, which is the wise thing to do. You end up, if you're willing to kind of push aside these ethical questions in the name of, but we don't have time to think about these things. I mean, you're going to get what you ask for, right? You're going to potentially put yourself and humanity and all kinds of people in danger. So we're seeing this happen with AI. The issue again is the promise of the amount of money to be made by disintermediating, pretty much every single, most aspects, most jobs is enormous. Now, Christians, we would look at this and be like, okay, that's good to a point. And yet there's tremendous harm that comes with upending much of society, which is what we see happening with AI. So Ryan, why don't you kind of unpack some of the ways, again, just some of the ways that you're seeing this happening. Like, what are some of the ways in which normal jobs are being upended? We've talked about this a little bit in past episodes, but maybe just kind of give another couple examples that you've been thinking about over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think the best way to look at it is we use self-driving cars as an example. So everyone's like, oh, the robots are so far away. It's going to be so long before we have robots that are changing society and stuff like that. It's good to recognize that Elon considers a Tesla to be a robot, and like what task have we given it? we want the robot to be able to drive from point A to point B without a human driving, right? That's a huge breakthrough for 100 different reasons. Taxis, freight, packages. It changes like delivery of everything potentially, car ownership, you know, all sorts of things get disrupted. Safety, like, you know, saving lives and things like that. Anyways, so we're like, think about how complex of a task that is. And obviously he's going after it because it's the natural financial incentives in the market. So he's going after this huge, enormous market. Software development's also, it's a very, very capital intensive market. Like software developers make a lot of money. So they went after it first, not just because there's software developments that, you know, they typically are at the cutting edge of technology use anyway. So they're paying, I mean, most software developers are paying $200 a month right now, just for perspective, to use the latest model and then to have plans big enough so that they can use it all day, every day. And even sometimes then they still use up their $200 worth of credits. So we're at, the robots are self-driving and they can drive all the way across the United States without intervention. Like, how many people know that? And then the software is writing, the software development is at the point where it's already writing the latest models of the latest AI models. So like, it's already producing itself in a sense at a scale that like we can't comprehend. And so then basically go down to like less complex jobs, like office jobs, secretarial, finance, legal. And I say less complex, like imagine just like legal type of jobs, contracts, all of finance, spreadsheets, accounting, bookkeping.
Yeah.
Just keep going. Like,
yeah, yep. I'll give you an example. I mean, I guess I can give an example. So the other day we're getting ready to publish second edition of Thank God for Bitcoin. And so I'm sitting there, I'm trying to upload the documents. And because there's it's a whole thing, there's like a discrepancy in the authorship of the first book and this one. So TGFB Media is going to be publishing this second edition. And so because of that discrepancy, they wanted extra paperwork. Like Amazon wanted paperwork to basically demonstrate that we had a legal agreement between the group of eight of us who wrote the initial Thank God for Bitcoin. So the Bitcoin and Bible group is what that's called, and TGFB Media. And so I was like, okay, they gave me like a list of six ways that I could prove that I was who I said I was and that I had the permission to publish that I said I had. And so I was like, okay. I just went in there, was like, copy paste one of the things, paste it into Claude, and just basically tell Claude exactly, which is one of the AI models, tell Claude, this is what I want to do. I need to do this. I need a legal document that shows and boom, laid out in like two sentences, and just hit enter and boom, within a minute, it spits me out a contract. Looks great. I mean, it's got both the parties mentioned, it's got everything laid out in it, you know, legalese, the whole thing. And so again, like it's just like, this is the level of things that you can do. And then again, so now you can still, there might be like in this circumstance, I didn't need to get any other further verification. I didn't need to get, stamps or anything like that or from government entities. But like, it's one of these things where, I mean, even if it's not totally ready to replace, it can still do the overwhelming majority of the work. And when you're hiring an attorney and they're charging you by the hour, you know, if you're removing so much of that work that would be necessary, well then boom. I mean, you're just thinking about the amount of money that you're able to save. And we've talked in a couple of past episodes about the ways we've used AI, ChatGPT or Claude, whatever, to help us fix things in our car. You know, so I saved at least the day that my car broke down and I used ChatGPT to help me figure out what was wrong with it and then how to fix it, I saved at least $300 or $400 that day from a $20 per month, Claude subscription. So, I mean, there's just an immense amount of money to be saved that we would look at and be like, hey, this is actually really good news for people. At the same time, I mean, the title of this episode is The Cantillon Effect and the AI Delta. Yes, there is going to be a lot of money that's being able to be saved. But to your point, I mean, let's get into, I mean, as of right now, and this is how it always is with technology. It's always more expensive for the early adopters. I mean, a computer in 1990 was, you know, orders of magnitude more expensive than it is to have a computer now, even though the computers now are much more expensive. But I mean, let's talk about some of the costs of these things and some of the costs of these services. Obviously, they're trivial on the one hand, but you've got somebody like Chat or OpenAI, who I believe the estimates are that they're running, the stated estimates are that they're going to be running like a $14 billion deficit. Like, they're not making any money. Like all of their money is just going into trying to build out and trying to be the first one to reach, you know, to get audience capture and all this kind of stuff. They're spending every last, you know, dying cent to be able to do that. And so again, that is something that we have to take into account. That is something where it's like, all right, there's all this promise, but at the end of the day, if these things aren't profitable, you know, if you can't make any money, well then boom, there's going to be less companies that are going to be able to be around to do these things. I think the way Christians should think about this is it's not a matter of if these things are going to happen or if they're going to be good to some degree. It's got to do with how quickly are they going to come. You know, there's I mean, if we look at the way that God created the world. God created the world to operate with sowing and reaping. And so God designs that change and growth happens slowly at first, and then over time you're more fruitful. And so you plant an apple seed, it grows a tree, it takes a while to do that. And then the first year that it's producing apples, it's not producing a ton of apples, but then in successive years it produces more and more apples. And so the temptation for sinful humanity is to always try to shortcut those things, and shortcuts always bring pain. And so this is again the question of, you know, what is this actually going to look like? It's not that there's not tons of good to be done with AI. It's that what's going to be the cost to trying to pursue these things as fast as possible? And that's where both the human cost, you're talking about thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs being lost. You're talking about, I mean, just there's a whole host of things that we could look at.
When you talk about when we can just casually save hundreds and hundreds of dollars in just real passive use of this new tool, just and that's just saving, like, that's it, just figuring out, like, giving us really good advice that just saves us that much money in a month. Think about what it's going to do for a company and how much it's going to save the company in labor costs.
Yeah.
Like, that's where you're realizing if a company has 500 employees, it's just going to come down to at what point are these AI models and agents able to do the jobs needed for the company to flourish?
Yeah.
And at a certain point, like, Now, obviously this gets into, like, if you're a Christian business owner, your job is to be profitable and to be efficient and to, because if you're not, you won't exist. Like, that's just the way the world works. So if you don't, like, that's a way to love your employees, to remain profitable. Well, the way you do that, you have to remain efficient. Otherwise, your competitors, their products will be 10 times cheaper than yours and you'll be out of business. And so if you don't continue to work hard, become more efficient, use new tools, your business isn't going to exist, and you're not going to be able to provide any jobs for anyone, let alone yourself. You're not even loving yourself at that point. So all that to say, there is no stopping it. The Christian business owner and the non-Christian business owner alike are going to have to adopt AI tools as quickly as they can. And I think that's
it's a good question to kind of throw out to yourself and ask. You know, you brought it up a little bit there, Ryan. Does a business exist to create jobs? And the answer is no. I mean, if I was to use an ancient example of like Jesus talking about, let's say the master who owns a wine, a vineyard and makes wine, right? The purpose of that job, the purpose of that place is to actually produce the thing it said it was going to produce. So I think you can look at it like even nonprofits or for-profit, you're getting together as a group in order to try to achieve some type of goal. That's what you're doing. So you're not saying I've started this business to maximally hire as many people as I can. Otherwise, you're not going to have a good product. You're not going to have something people want to buy. And another thing that came to my mind, I've made all these mistakes, by the way, as a business owner. That's why I maybe speak boldly to it. When you're focused on that kind of thing, like trying to keep everybody's jobs, you actually punish the best workers. You reward the worst workers. In a certain way, those worst workers don't get to find out how bad they are so they can improve later at their next job. And your best workers leave and you end up with like a team of B minus workers, and your product suffers because of that. So that's a sort of, maybe it's even a masculine thing, but it's just a growing up thing of saying, in order to really love this group of people, I have to make sure that we're on mission, you know? And I hope I haven't gone too far afield of the AI, but I'm just saying at a heart level, we have to adopt these things. And something I was chatting with my wife last night about, we were catching up on all the Simpsons prophecies and what's going to happen this year from the Simpsons. And I was saying, you know, there's a neutrality or even maybe a positive to new technology. I think it's a positive, but you know, you read about all the evil things that people are doing with tech and some of the scammy things that are happening. You know, there's a court case with OpenAI, how they became for profit. And you can start thinking, oh, I don't like AI. I don't like this new world. You know, I don't like how it's going to know where we are or whatever it might be. The reality is that it's not bad, because those things are not scary because the technology itself is bad. The tech is just an advancement in human knowledge and application. And I'm not trying to paint it with totally rose-colored glasses, but a lot of the effects that we're worried about are just the existence of like a gun instead of a bow and arrow, you know? And you can dislike it if you want to, but it's been discovered. It's superior. It's for sure going to be the new thing. And so we have to learn to say, okay, how in this new world do we live ethically, and what do we tell our kids, to the point you guys made earlier? What should you be learning? How should you be studying? How should you be prepared for adulthood? Because some of it is because of evil use, but a lot of the things we're worried about are because of the power of the tech itself, the force multiplier.
Yeah. I was talking this last week, I've been reading all these AI posts. Just because, like, the reason we're having this podcast episode about this subject again, it's that, like, what's happening right now is really, really significant. And it's going to absolutely impact everyone. It's going to impact Bitcoiners, and I think, and Christian Bitcoiners, and us Christians, and the Bitcoin community, like, we think deeply about a lot of things. And I think this is an excellent thing to not take lightly right now. You know how, Matt, you're talking about how quickly it shifted from using Google to like now we're just asking AI. Think about the implications these AI tools are already having on the younger generation. How much it's going to change education, learning, research. Like, we grew up constantly having to read books to do assignments, to do reports, all this kind of stuff. And I don't want to get too deep into it, because there's things about that I actually disagree with. The young people aren't going to have to read very much, and not like we had to read in the past. And so it's literally changing. I think it's going to change literacy quite significantly. But as parents, like, is that a good thing? The quick, short answer, absolutely not. Like,
yeah.
you as parents, or as a parent of six kids right now, one of the best things you can do for your family and your children right now is have your kids read as much many books as possible. Like, help them absolutely fall in love with reading, because it's not just reading so that you can get information so that you can do a job well. It's so that you can think well. Like, yep. The people that are going to flourish in the future are going to be able to think well, and not because they had to read, but because they were taught that reading is good and they were taught to enjoy reading. And that's like, dude, just do that one thing and it's going to put your kids like a mile ahead of other kids. Cause like, dude, we're already seeing it. Like, parents are going to like their kids can do the whole reports in like 3 seconds, you know, what used to take us a week, and they don't have to do all the research. They don't have to do all the reading. They're, you know, yeah, it's going to, and then, yeah, anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just like, I mean, the other thing is just, yeah, the place where this becomes really difficult to kind of map out and to kind of predict where it's going to go is because of like the multiplying effect of multiple things that are going on. And so like one of the things you have going on is you have younger people than ever are operating, I mean, $1,000 devices, or, you know, a combination of a computer and their cell phone, like $2,500, you know, $3,500 worth of technology, and are absolutely frying their attention spans. Like, from a young age, they're absolutely cooking their brain's ability to, you know, to think comprehensively and, you know, be able to tolerate being bored for, you know, any length of period of time. And so like, it's like, yeah, it's like, on the one hand, yes, AI is going to do a ton of like really good. You're going to be able to do things more efficiently, whatever. At the same time, you know, it's like the discipline, like, society still requires a certain level of discipline that AI and that the internet itself kind of work against because of how quickly and easily they give us things. And so it's going to be really interesting, because, I mean, I think there's tons of conversations about like UBI, universal basic income, that the government's going to provide everyday, you know, normal people, because all of our work, all of our most important jobs are going to be done by robots and AI and whatever. I think that there are places that are going to try that. I don't think it's going to go well, because, I mean, just, yeah, the people, like, we need, God designed people to live and work with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, to give our whole body, you know, to certain causes, whether it's our own survival, you know, whatever it is, whatever kind of task it is that you want to focus on. Like, we're designed to give our whole selves to it. And if you're going to separate, if you're going to now, you're going to remove, you know, survival from part of what it means to be human, like, it's going to be, I'm just not real optimistic about how that's going to go.
Well, the kind of communist / socialist, like, dream is, yeah, now that you no longer have to worry about your supply and your food and your housing, yeah, you're going to all be artists, and you're going to all be like engineers, and you're going to all be like poets, and we're going to spend our time. And then that absolutely never happens, ever.
Yeah.
The only thing that happens is we stay just as busy. And if it comes to entertainment, we're just as addicted and yeah, everything else. But at the same time, I don't think it's absolutely contrary to God's ways to say, okay, your basics are provided for, but you still have to have a vision for what it means to be human.
Yep.
You know, and the UBI or the UBI, what is that called again?
Universal. Universal.
Everybody gets those basics paid for. Everybody gets $2,000 a month or three, whatever it might be. And then Elon's thing is, he calls it like universal high income, which doesn't really mean anything in my view, because the numbers don't matter. It just matters what you can get and what you can do, you know. Yeah. But the point being, okay, at that point, you might end up with a, you know, what was that movie in the 90s with Brad Pitt, Fight Club? You might end up back at Fight Club in 10 years, where everybody has everything they need and they can get a job and they can, you know, but then there's no meaning. And so they're out there, yeah, like just dying for no reason, you know? Yeah. And so I guess as Christians, this is where the Lord informs us what we're made for. And one of those things we talked about a little bit beforehand, you know, there are many righteous deeds that can be done with a force multiplier, you know. I know I got a crying baby. Is that pretty loud for you guys?
No, you're good.
Sorry. So one of the things that I'm in my heart, yes, yes, it's a blessing. But yeah, serving the poor is one of those areas of the of human activity which pleases God, and also in my view, you get the highest possible return on investment. Mm-hmm. You know, an example of like there's Afghanistan behind me in the picture. If you can just literally provide drinking water, just that simple. You save thousands or millions of lives. If you can just make it so where a place is irrigated or there's a, you know, people have, and so maybe those are things that we should be thinking through as a culture of how to take the force multiplier and say, let's address these basic concerns around the whole world for those in need. I know we were going to discuss the Cantillon effect. I don't know if that's still an important part of this thing, but that is that the hollowing out of the middle is pretty much, in my view, a determined fact. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll change in the future. Maybe some new things will come along, but that's going to happen. And that's why people nowadays, and maybe even on this pod, we're encouraging you, try to get to your understanding and use these things so that you're not absolutely at the bottom and you're not struggling to try and stay in the middle because the middle is going away.
Yeah. So here to kind of touch on that, and I think it's a great segue. So the Cantillon effect, many of you probably already know this, but for those of you who do not, the Cantillon effect, this is from river.com. You can go to river.com/TGFB, and that's the place where we recommend you buy Bitcoin, one of the best companies in the whole industry. So they have a whole education part of their, it's the river.com/learn tab on their website. It's fantastic for all kinds of things related to economics and Bitcoin. And so we have the Cantillon effect here. So the Cantillon effect describes the uneven effect inflation has on goods and assets in an economy. Since new fiat money, fiat currency is injected into an economy at specific points, its effects are felt by different people and industries at different times. So this distorts the relative prices and benefits certain parties while disadvantaging others. There's a cool little video you can watch. So basically the closer you are to the source of money creation, the more you benefit. So if you're super wealthy, you're able to get cheap debt, you know, you're able to get, you know, money that right after it's created before the rest of society, even appreciates that it's there and has time to price it into, you know, housing and a whole 100 other things. And then again, the second layer is the entrepreneurial class. So these are people who are starting businesses and have, you know, a little bit, they have less wealth than the ultra wealthy, but they're doing their thing. They're still able to get assets. They're still able to take out debt to get larger assets. And then you have everybody else. And so these are largely people who don't have the ability to get, you know, assets or get access to cheap debt to be able to accumulate assets. And so they are much more reliant on cash and reliant on other businesses. And so this is what you see is, you know, over the last 30 years, you know, whereas before we had tons of competition, you had Kmart, you had Walmart, you have all, you know, in terms of just even in that, I can't remember what that type of store is called. What do you call those? Not drug stores. What is it? Just normal goods. Like there were regional ones. There were tons of, regional restaurants or like local restaurants. And now more and more as the Cantillon effect has taken place, now every city you go to, you can find pretty much the same restaurants, right? Obviously, there still are some local restaurants, but there's far more, growth and existence of a small number of national chains than there are, you know, in this flourishing of this, you know, humongous number of local or regional restaurants, stores, whatever it is. And so the interesting consequences of this is you have, again, as Ryan mentioned, or as Matt mentioned, the middle class, this entrepreneurial class, they get, as it gets more difficult through things like, I mean, there's 100 things that make this more difficult. Again, the ultra wealthy and their businesses can get access to cheaper debt, can get access to all kinds of stuff. And so if you're a middle class business, it's, you know, you can still do that to a degree, but you can't do that to anywhere near the degree of the ultra wealthy. And so over time, they get wealthier, they get bigger. The ultra wealthy can also afford what's called a regulatory moat. They can afford to lobby the government to pass laws that are more convenient for them and less convenient and more difficult for upstart businesses or competitors to compete with them. And so this is something that happens. But one of the consequences of this is, think about the political implications of this, right? Think about the political implications you're going to have, and we're already seeing this. And this is really what some of the race for AI is, you know, this is the race that's going on. It's a race to see who is going to be the 1 to 2 to 3, you know, ultra wealthy AI platforms that then are able to, because of the head start that they have, or because of the, you know, the particular things they have, they're able to be the AI guys, and, you know, they're going to win at the expense of everybody else. And so think about what this does politically, right? We already have somebody in Elon Musk Elon is like fiat man in a very real sense. The amount of money he has that is directly related to his ability to get subsidies from government subsidies, effectively endless amounts of free money, is staggering. And the consequence of it is Elon is richer than pretty much everyone and anyone who's ever lived. He has more personal wealth than entire nations. And then the economic impact of those businesses is so consequential that, I mean, he can pretty much pay to get done anything he wants to get done. And so this is what's going to happen. So now what does democracy look like? Or, you know, we don't live in a democracy, but what does a republic look like when you have somebody who literally has like Charlemagne level power due to his wealth, like who has Genghis Khan level, you know, level power? You know, what does that look like? How do you even have a political, what does politics look like when, I mean, effectively Elon swung the election both through his ownership of Twitter and through his willingness to dump hundreds of millions of his personal dollars into supporting, you know, one candidate. This is a very difficult thing, and that people are not grasping, you know, as this continues to happen, as this happens, as it relates to AI. I mean, you now have information that is, you know, being mediated. These models, which more and more people are using, are mediating reality. They're mediating answers that people are, you know, they're giving answers to questions that people have. And this has been the case with, you know, with Google and this kind of stuff. But this, in many ways, I think you could argue, makes it even trickier. I just think like the political implications of this are drastic. I think, you know, over time, you're going to have more and more, or like a small group of people are going to exercise more and more power. And so you're going to get something closer to, you know, it's going to be like a de facto monarchy or a de facto, de facto oligarchy.
Feudalism.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be people that, yeah, feudalism is a great way to put it. I mean, there's going to be a small group of people who own tons of assets, who have tons of capital, tons of wealth, who are very skilled, who are able to leverage tools like AI and, you know, marry AI with these tools with their own brilliance and leverage them into staggering amounts of wealth. That's going to happen and be, you know, take place. They're also going to have the money to, you know, buy and get the best benefit of AI, as we mentioned. So Ryan, how much Moses pays, like $200 a month for one of the,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the latest, it's the quad plan.
Correct.
So there's quad professional plan or something like that.
Sure. So in all these AI platforms, they have like these high tier,
and they're also subsidizing that. I think yes. So it's an arms race to get the software developer community to use their models. So Claude is giving five times. So if you're spending, those people are spending $200 a month, they're getting I think they're getting $1,000 worth of credits. And that this isn't something I don't even think they're making money on it right now.
Yeah.
They're probably burning $1,000 worth of electricity to for that one user, like legitimately, or an enormous amount plus the CapEx expense for the hardware that they're putting out. But yeah, it's,
Go ahead, Ryan. You can introduce that.
So Brant Bashaw talks about how Christians need to show grace to one another through this time. And he basically talks about, his article is excellent. I highly recommend it. But he basically talks about how these tools like AI come onto the scene, and it's not, even the understanding of a tool is not equally distributed, and the agency, we're created equally valuable in God's eyes, but we're not equally valuable in agency and skill set and things like that. And so he talks about the fact that, like, there's a lot of people that literally don't have time to stay up on AI or use AI tools at all. And that's true. And so he's just talking about, like, we're about to go through one of the biggest shifts in, like, ever when it comes to work on a short period of time. And there's a huge percentage of the population that literally can't even stay up on it. And he was just encouraging, like, especially the Christian community to just to be gracious with one another, be productive, make a lot of money, be generous. And just understand that it's not going to be equally distributed.
I think
I have a little story.
Kind of what I was trying to get at is one of the things I was trying to get at is, like, the reality is, again, we live in, like, a world that acts like people, again, are all created equal, and in terms of and they ought to be all treated equal in sense of outcomes. And it's like, no, like, that's never been how the world has operated. It's not even, it wouldn't even be good if that's how we operated. Because again, like, there is a sense in which it's really good that Elon is where he is, because he's one of the most capable people who's ever lived. I mean, it's staggering. I mean, the amount he's learning on the fly things about rockets and, like, groundbreaking things. He's taking in all this information that people have had for, the best experts in the field have had for decades. He's literally taking in on the fly and incorporating both expert. This is an awesome video of him. Like, he has some journalist asks him a question, and he's taking the things that he's learned from these rocket experts, but then he also takes into account this question that this journalist asked him, and he goes, yeah, that's a really good point. We're going to try that. And so, like, within a couple months, he now integrates this idea that this random journalist had. And because of the only separation between idea and execution is him and his money, boom, he just goes to town, implements this guy's idea, and it ends up being this, like, groundbreaking idea. And so, like, it's awesome that happens. We don't want a situation. We don't want communism where we're all treated the same. Like, this is not a good thing. And so I think as Christians, this is one place where, again, there's been, like, these misunderstandings and lies that have been fed to us by culture, that Christians have a really cool opportunity. And this guy, Brent, is, you know, doing a really good job of kind of unpacking, hey, like, this looks like unfair, or this looks like not necessarily good, but this actually is normal. This is totally normal. This is how God designed things to work. And so this is something that we shouldn't object to, some of this AI stuff on the grounds that this doesn't make us all equal. It's like that's never been how the world works.
Yeah. I had a question, I've started thinking of Elon as the world's best manager rather than the world's richest man, because it has to do with, it doesn't have to do with him having money. He was in an interview where he said, someone asked him, if you had to start over and all your wealth was wiped out, and his answer was kind of like, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I would just go ask somebody for money, you know, and because it isn't about the money in the end. I mean, it's a little more in depth than that, but it's like the world functions when it's free, when it's relatively free, the world kind of functions like that parable of Jesus's, where if the one person doesn't use their money, it ends up in the hands of the one who has 10. The one who has 10 brought the same return as the one who has 5 in the parable, But the one who has 10, I think, and, you know, I don't want to read too much into it because Jesus told it. You can read it yourself. But it seems that he had the highest responsibility. He had the highest risk. He had the greater, you know, responsibility to bring a return. He does. And so Jesus says, take away all the money that this guy has and give it to this one. And chances are that person is going to now bring a greater return with 11 talents that he started off with. You know, he started off with 10. Another thing on the Cantillon effect, and I think this will be helpful for someone out there, is I remember years ago learning about economics, and it's kind of a ground level picture that we can all understand. And it's this: you have a really poor family. They run out of toilet paper. You know, they have zero toilet paper in the house. They run down to 7-Eleven and buy a toilet paper. It's like $2.75 or whatever. Think of a number. Maybe it's $1.75. They run out of toilet paper again. They rush over to 7-Eleven. It's $1.75. You know, most of us here in this room, most of us probably listening, you go to Costco, you get like 100 of them. They're like 30 cents each, you know? And so this is a parable where the one who has enough to buy the Costco bundle gets their toilet paper for 30 cents each. The one who ends up desperate and they need it right now ends up their whole life paying $1.75 for a roll of toilet paper. And when you expand that into mega corporations, that's what's going on here too, with buying tokens and buying, and also, you know, you go, wow, this person spent $1 million a month on, you know, I'm making that number up, on Claude or something, but maybe they found that one thing that is able to turn over like a 5 cent profit every single time they put it in.
Yeah.
So of course you're going to spend $1 million. You spend $1 million and every single time you buy a $1 thing, you get 5 cents, you'll spend $1 billion. So it's just a very, it's hard for us to kind of visualize it, 'cause most of us are not in that position, you know, but it's as simple as that, you know. And I used to be a little bit resistant as a Christian, to the term capitalism. I'm like, why do we say that? It's not about money. You know, it's not about capital. It's really about being free and free market. Mm-hmm. And so I always preferred the term free market. And I kind of grew out of that by realizing, actually, you need capital, you know, like you need capital to buy a machine so that you can manufacture something. You have to be able to start off with that $20,000 to buy the machine or something. You need capital, like what's going on now, to develop AI. You need capital to charge people $200, what you guys just described, but actually you're burning $1,000, you know? And so these guys are burning money, but in the middle of doing it, they're developing the product. They're trying to grab the people onto their system. That's the more self-interested part. But they're also developing like laws where, you know, the administrations are saying, okay, you guys are going to be allowed to build your own power plants and stuff like that. You know, well, that's going to change the pricing. If they can build their own power plants, now they can, the $1,000 is not $1,000 anymore. Now it's $100 maybe, you know, now it's actually profitable. And I'm just throwing out a lot of things to see where it sticks, but you do have to be able to like bunch money together in a pile in order to do any of this stuff. It isn't just a matter of saying everybody open up a mom and pop shop, you know? So how to do that righteously and how to think of it righteously is really important, especially to those that we are in line with biblically listening to this.
Yeah, I think that this is a good way to think about this. Like there's a sanctified Cantillon effect, right? And this is kind of what's being described here. Like this is, where's that? Here? It's Proverbs, can you remember the verse? Proverbs 13:22. A godly man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous, right? Like there's people who by their mismanagement and foolishness, like they, you know, if due to disordered loves, they love, you know, whatever it is, they love, you know, gambling, or they love, you know, whatever, like they love certain types of food. And so they go out and they blow all their money on these things. Like this is what happens. If you blow your money on all these things, you're not going to have the money. And then by extension, your grandkids and your kids and grandkids aren't going to have the money.
And now they're not even going to have grandkids. Like that's another thing. It's like literally we're so debauched now that people,
Yeah. And so, this is like the sanctified version of the Cantillon effect, which is, you know, you work hard, you sacrifice your time and your energy to serve other people. And over time, you know, you get, you accumulate wealth that that you then leave to your kids. The problem is like with the, you know, like with fiat currency, when you apply that to the Cantillon effect, it's, you're able to get the benefit, not necessarily because you've added value, but because of just your proximity to the money producer, just because you're, you know, friends, or, you know how to manipulate a system, you know, to benefit yourself and not. So like there's tons of money to be made that isn't actually benefiting society. You can just, you know, like this is honestly, I don't know. I wouldn't say that this is like a bulletproof explanation for why this response happens this way in the scriptures. But you have the passage where it talks about where Jesus tells the disciples, it's very difficult for the rich to inherit the kingdom. And it says that the disciples were like astounded and they're like, well, then who can be saved? Like if the rich can't be saved, then who can be saved?
And I just preached that on Sunday.
When we read that, we're like, did you?
Yeah.
Sorry, but we read that and we're like, wait, like why would they think that? Like, yeah. why would they have such a connection in their heads between being rich and being blessed by God? Like that, why? And again, I don't know. I'm not saying that this is why, but like, as you think about like the logic of if you have scarce money, then the way to get more money is to actually add value to people. And so if you are wealthy, it's because you've added value to lots of people. And so the Christian parlance for that is loving your neighbor. So I don't know if this is why, but like you can imagine a situation where the disciples are like, well, the reason they're wealthy is because they've loved their neighbor. And so, then how is it like, so if those people can barely make it into heaven, well, then what hope do we have? It's kind of one of those. It's like a logic of the way that money works within a society. I just think like there is a sanctified version. This is also an unsanctified version, which we're kind of observing and seeing, you know, like a whole economic system that is based on, you know, trying to get one over on people rather than actually loving and serving our neighbors. This is the system that we live in, but this is also where, see, this is part of what Bitcoin is doing, right? Like Bitcoin is enabling, it's soaking up ungodly wealth by people who've just totally bought part and parcel into a system that operates like this, that steals from people. That's contrasted with Bitcoin, which, you know, Bitcoin is a scarce thing that honors people's time and labor by allowing you to purchase it and then just not have to, you don't have to spend all this time thinking about it, trying to make more. It kind of works for you. And so this is a much more just system, a much more, you know, honest, fair, sustainable for the long-term system. And this is part of what we can attribute a lot of Bitcoin success to that fact. And Bitcoin's, you know, meteoric price rise denominated in these unjust currencies. So again, we've been going for about an hour right now, and I'll give each of you one last opportunity to close with anything, and then we'll close it for the
something that comes to my mind is just the worthiness of trying to think these things through, like not only here on this podcast, but in your own life and your own home, whoever hears it. The Christian walk is not a matter of, okay, here's what you do. And it's just as simple to apply to your life as, you know, oh, now I know what to do. It's actually like always asking these balancing questions that Jordan brought up of like, okay, on the one hand, the principle is that you're serving your neighbor, and then you will. And I've said this way to my church maybe 10 years ago. I said to them, especially to the men, look, you should be excellent at what you do. You should be faithful to what you do. You should be showing up on time for what you do. You should be studying and growing and continuing to get better at what you do. Let's say you're a carpenter, a plumber, whatever it might be. Therefore, barring the work of Satan and barring other like noetic effects of the fall, meaning all the ways that the fall has affected us negatively, you should be successful at what you do. If you're, hang on a sec. My son opened the door.
Jordan, can you go to the bottom of the shore?
Yeah, barring those negative effects, if you're a Christian who's faithful, you should be successful. Okay? Now, that's not always going to be money. But it's going to be successful at what you put your mind to, right? But the flip side, and I'm not to preach the sermon, but like on Sunday, my take is, they, and in the book of Luke in general, they had this problem where they thought that power and money is a sign that you are blessed by God and therefore righteous, you know, and you can see that in numerous of the
yep.
set things that Jesus sets up. You know, there's the judge and the widow, and there's the man who comes to pray, who's a Pharisee. And then there's the sinner who's a tax collector, and all these other things where he's trying to break your mind to say, it's not necessarily a sign of God's blessing on that person as though they're more righteous. And so I think that's the tension, because that isn't just one answer. The one answer is that's not a sign of blessing, but the tension is, but yet you should be successful if you're putting your whole heart, you're not being drunk,
yeah.
you're telling the truth, you know, you have a good reputation. And I think that's the tension we're supposed to live in.
Exactly. Yeah. We observed this with like Abraham. Abraham was obviously super wealthy. Job, he was super wealthy. He lost his wealth. And there were people who attributed sin to his losing of the wealth. They assumed that something, he must have done something wrong. And so, yeah, but so there, it is like this tension that, yeah, I feel like we can overstate the case because of things like the prosperity gospel, which is an abomination and hellbound. And, you know, we do not, you know, ascribe to that whatsoever. But like there is like a real sense in which, you know, when we submit ourselves to the way that God has designed us to work and the world to work, that we do find blessing in a real and non-cringe way. So Ryan, give you your last word.
Could you pull up the bottom of the Shores article again?
Yeah. Yep.
I want to go over and zoom in. I just want to go over his last thing. I think he just ends it. It's a really powerful take, in my opinion.
Here we go.
All the way down to where, maybe, what is it? And here's what I suspect. Can you scroll down to that spot?
Where is it at?
Towards right there.
Oh yeah.
Right there. Yeah. So, and here's what I suspect. AI won't just change what we can do. It will change what productive means. I think that's a really powerful, like that's one of those statements you can chew on for a bit. Kind of like what Matt was just saying, like, like we're going to need to instead, like the way we measure our output, our contributions, our problem solving, or like what productive, like the measurement itself is going to change. Like that's how significant the advancements are. Because every technological era has redefined productivity for most of history. It's meant survival. Then it meant surplus or how much we could store against future scarcity, the Renaissance. Let's see. He goes on. Let's see. If AI can win at throughput, it will then what's left for humans to be productive at? He goes, wisdom is a great place to start. Knowing what's worth doing, not just how to do it faster. It's asking the right questions, since AI is far better at answers, not producing, but interpreting, valuing, directing attention towards what matters. It's creativity, connecting across domains in ways that aren't pattern matchable. It's relationships, the things that require a human in the room. And I, like, one of the best ways I would sum that up is it's knowing what problems God has given you personally to solve, or like how you can help personally. And it's like, that's actually one of the hardest things to do. It doesn't matter if you're running a factory. Yeah. What should you work on today? What should you work on? There's 5 trillion things you could work on, but like it's knowing what, like where to direct your attention. And then all of a sudden we're getting the force multiplier of the century. And you can, like, you guys, we were talking about tasks, like Jordan, your task, like your battle with Amazon, literally we're at the point where maybe within the next couple of months, you probably could just have an agent do all the work.
Yeah.
And you're just going to be like, hey, here's my situation. I'm frustrated with this. I just need you to go ahead and solve this and go ahead and get everything in order and do it.
Yeah.
And it's just going to do it. And you're going to come back an hour later and it's going to text message you and say it's done. Or if it has a question. Anyways, we're just getting to the point where so one of the things that our kids and ourselves, we need to get good at, like, discerning what problems we should even be attempting to solve.
Yeah.
And that's a skill that's going to transcend, you know, like basically you have to move yourself up to higher levels of thinking, in the sense of,
Yeah.
Wow. Now you can solve problems 10 times faster. So I hope you're good at figuring out which problems to solve. Because like, if you're not,
I think I just want to highlight that. I pulled out my highlighter and just say, that's the most important point. And I was going to say it a different way earlier. The most important point is AI and robots are going to give us the ability to make what we're not our dreams come true, whatever, to make the things we can imagine better. And I think people following God are the ones who are really going to understand what are the tasks, or we should aspire to that. What are the tasks that are going to be the best for human flourishing in every way? Because you're going to be able to do much easier the things you want to do. So the question is, what should you do? That's great. I think that's a super powerful way to finish it off, Ryan.
Yeah. The one last thing, it's not where we can eliminate the attention. We can't. The question is how we live within them, honestly. And also just one last thing, I would just say that, this is an important time especially for Christians to have your identity as a child of God. And to the degree in which our identity is in what we do for work, there's going to be a lot of people with identity crises because work is going to change so much. Mm. And so that's a really important thing to learn, like hold loosely what you do each day, be flexible and, hold on. It's like,
it makes you think of the God shakes that which can be shaken so that which cannot be shaken will endure. It's like something along those lines. Like, again, there's going to be potentially a lot of change. And it's like, but if it's going to change, then it wasn't going to be there anyhow. Like it wasn't going to be able to withstand anyhow. Again, we continue on thinking about AI. We'll probably do more episodes in the future. We're talking with Moses this coming Saturday. So if you have questions, feel free to shoot them, DM them to the TGFB Twitter account. You can also DM them to, or you can email them to contact@tgfb.com. We will happily receive them and then pose them on Saturday. I will remind everyone, if you go to tgfb.com/conference, you can get your tickets for the TGFB 26 conference in Fort Worth. We're going to be in Texas for the first time. Many of you are like, wait, you guys aren't from Texas because your logo looks like kind of like a backwards or like a real Texas. No, we are not. We are not from Texas, but you can grab your tickets right here. You can buy them. You can get an early bird ticket with a merch bundle if you so desire. Go ahead and do that. We'd love to see you. It's going to be really good. The other thing we can also go back to, oops, not there. We can also go back to, if you are looking for gifts for friends, family, whoever, you can go to the tgfb.com or store.tgfb.com. You can buy your copies of The Orange Umbrella, our kids book that just came out in paperback or hardcover. You can do that. The whole thing rhymes. You can also buy the Orange Umbrella coloring book, which is basically the entire book. It's got all of the same lines as the book does, but it just isn't colored. So you can add your own coloring choices. We are so close. I mentioned we are so close to the second edition of TGFB dropping on Amazon. It should be by the middle of next week. It's taken much longer than we anticipated. But they're just confirming that we're not scammers. And so that should be done. You can pre-order those copies here in hardcover or paperback. Copy of Gospel According to Bitcoin or your TGFB coffee. You can get that as well. Let us help you give gifts to your friends. Christian Bitcoin-related gifts. We'd love to do that. What were you going to say, Ryan?
Oh, I was just going to say, just remember, you're going to go down as one of the last authors to go through the old process of getting a book published.
Correct.
It's literally going to all be done for you here, 6 months.
Yep. So again, help us rejoice. Rejoice in owning a collector's item, one of the last books published through the dinosaur process. We're grateful for you guys. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Ryan. We hope to have Ash back with us next week. He's needed to take some time off for some stuff. So we're grateful for all of you listeners. If you are liking and appreciating what you're hearing, you can like, subscribe on all of the places where you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. You can leave reviews. One of the most helpful things you can do is leave if you think we deserve it. 5-star reviews. They, especially in Apple, they kind of help push you to other people to help us find other people who might be interested in hearing the type of content that we create. So we're grateful for you all. We will see you on the next episode of either the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast or To the Unknown podcast.